Hello and welcome to this podcast. In case this is the first one that you're listening to, I'm Cindy Pierce, and several years ago I started a Bible study in my home about the women in the Bible. Each week was about one or two women, and I read her story out of the Bible with some thoughts and facts about the story, and then we would talk about the characteristics and how we could apply that to our lives. I loved the study, and I was so excited about it that soon some other women that I worked with wanted to participate. So soon I was doing that study several times a week. At the encouragement of some of those ladies, I've put them on a podcast. I'm using the same format I used in the study. I read the story right out of the Bible. I use New American Standard because that's what I grew up reading. And then I talk a little bit about the story. One of the things that I love about the study is that God's Word says in 2 Timothy 3:16 that all Scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. So I believe that as you listen or study along, that God will speak to your heart. I hope you enjoy this as much as I have. This is the 15th, and there will be one more from the Old Testament, and then I can't wait to start the women from the New Testament on this podcast. But today is the story of Esther. So we will be reading right out of the book of Esther in the Old Testament. The name Esther means star, and that's her Persian name, and her Hebrew name was Hadassah, and that name actually meant myrtle. So the book happens during the time of Ezra, while the rebuilding of the temple had started, and in chapter 1 of the book of Esther, it talks about the king Ahasuerus, who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. And in the third year of his reign, he gives a banquet for all his princes in attendance, for all the officers and the nobles and the princes, and he displays the riches of his glory and the splendor of his majesty for 180 days. So there's banquets, and he shows everybody the gardens and the palace, and drinks were abundant in golden vessels of various kinds, and drinking was done according to the law, for the king had ordered each official that he should do according to the desires of each person. And while he's having this big banquet, Queen Vashti, his queen, also gave a banquet for the women in the palace. So all this is happening in chapter 1. Toward the end of that, in fact, it says in verse 10, on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded for Queen Vashti to be brought with her royal crown to display her beauty to the people and the princes, for she was beautiful. But in verse 12, Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command, and the king became very angry, and his wrath burned within him. So he wants her to come out and kind of show her off. She says, nope, not going to do it. So the rest of chapter 1, they figure out what they're going to do, that he can't just leave her as queen because she refused his orders. So by the end of chapter 1, they're going to search for a new queen. So chapter 2 says that after these things, when the anger of King Ahasuerus had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's attendants who served him said, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king, and let the king appoint overseers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather every beautiful young virgin to Susa, the capital, to the harem, into the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the woman, and let their cosmetics be given to them. Then let the young lady who pleases the king be queen in place of Vashti. And the matter pleased the king, and he did accordingly. So this is where the idea, I think, all while I was growing up, when this story was told, it was told as a beauty pageant. So all these young women are going to be gathered up and brought to the capital. In verse 5, it says there was a Jew in Susa, the capital, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been taken into exile from Jerusalem with the captives who had been exiled with Zechariah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had exiled. And he was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. Now the young lady was beautiful of form and face, and when her father and her mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So it came about in verse 8, it came about when the command and decree of the king were heard, and many young ladies were gathered to Susa, the capital, into the custody of Haggai, that Esther was taken into the king's palace, into the custody of Haggai, who was in charge of the women. Verse 9 is the first time we see this phrase, but look how many times this happens in this chapter. Now the young lady pleased him and found favor with him. So he quickly provided her with cosmetics and food and gave her 7 choice maids from the king's palace and transferred her and her maids to the best place in the harem. Esther did not make known her people or her kindred, for Mordecai had instructed her that she should not make them known. And every day Mordecai walked back and forth in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and how she fared. Now when the turn of each young lady came to go into King Ahasuerus, after the end of her 12 months under the regulations for the women, for the days of their beautification were completed as follows: 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with spices and the cosmetics for women. And the young lady would go into the king in this way. Anything that she desired was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem to the custody of Shazgaz, the king's eunuch who is in charge of the concubines. She would not again go in to the king unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by name. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter, came to go into the king, she did not request anything except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the women, advised. And Esther found favor in the eyes of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus, to his royal palace, in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther more than all the women, and she found favor and kindness with him more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his princes and servants, and he made a holiday for the provinces and gave gifts according to the king's bounty. So in verses 9, 15, and 17, it's mentioned that she found favor. And I love that because there's a lot of other verses in the Bible that talk about the favor of God. In Acts 5:34, there's a Pharisee named Gamaliel who is respected by all. In Nehemiah 2:8, it says that the good hand of the Lord was with Nehemiah. In Daniel 1:9, it says that God granted Daniel favor. In Genesis 39:21, it says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and gave him favor." In Luke 2:52, talking about Jesus, it says that Jesus was in favor with God and man. And in Romans 14:18, it talks about his followers and about being acceptable to God and approved by men. So the favor of God is interesting because it can be with you in any circumstances, any situation. And in many of those verses, the people were not, Joseph was not in a good situation, and yet God granted him with favor. So it is a good thing to pray for the favor of God. So if we go down to verse 19, when the virgins were gathered around together the second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Esther had not yet made known her kindred or her people, even as Mordecai had commanded her, for Esther did what Mordecai told her, as she had done when under his care. So in verse 21, this is a couple of verses, a story about Mordecai, but it's important in the story. In those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's officials from those who guarded the door, became angry and sought to lay hands on the king. But the plot became known to Mordecai, and he told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. Now when the plot was investigated and found to be so, they were both hanged on a gallows, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the king's presence. So Mordecai saved the king's life. He was at the right place at the right time, and it was written down. It was kept in the book of the kings. So in chapter 3, we meet Haman. And Haman has been promoted by the king. He's advanced and established his authority over all the princes, and all the king's servants who were at the gates would bow down to him and pay homage to him, so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow down or pay homage. So Haman was just furious because of that. In fact, in verse 6 it says, or 5, when Haman saw that Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage to him, Haman was filled with rage. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him who the people of Mordecai were. Therefore, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, who were throughout the whole kingdom of King Ahasuerus. So, in the Haman goes to the king, and he says, there's a certain people scattered among the people in your provinces, and their laws are different from those of all the other people, and they do not observe the king's laws. So it is not in the king's interest to let them remain. If it's pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who carry on the king's business to put into the treasuries. So the king took his signet ring from his hand, gave it to Haman, the son of an Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. So Haman's filled with rage. He's mad. He doesn't want to just take it out on Mordecai. So he decides a plot against all the Jews. So the rest of chapter 3 tells how that comes to pass. And then in chapter 4, we read where Mordecai learns the plot. So chapter 4, verse 1 says, when Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went into the midst of the city and wailed loudly and bitterly. He went as far as the king's gate, for no one was to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. In each and every province where the command and decree of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many had on sackcloth and ashes. Then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her, and the queen writhed in great anguish, and she sent garments to Mordecai that he might remove his sackcloth, but he did not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. So Hathach went out to Mordecai to the city square in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened, the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the edict which had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show Esther and inform her, and to order her to go into the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for her people. And Hathach came back and related Mordecai's words to Esther. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes to the king to the inner court who is not summoned, he has but one law, that they be put to death, unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. And they related Esther's words to Mordecai. Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this? So in verse 11, she tells Mordecai the facts, that the king has to summon you, and if he doesn't, you have one chance to not be put to death. In verse 13, he says, hey, don't think that you're not included in this whole thing. And in verse 14, he says, deliverance will come. God will deliver his people from another place. But who knows that you aren't there for this? So she answers wisely in verse 15. It says, Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, go, assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens will also fast in the same way. And thus I will go into the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and did just as Esther had commanded him. So this is the way to get wisdom. She's wise beyond her years. And she says, okay, I'm going to go and fast and pray and seek God's wisdom on how to handle this. And so that verse is just so important for her life, because she decides not just to do it because Mordecai says, not to just walk in, but she's going to fast and pray about it for 3 days. So it came about in chapter 5. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace in front of the king's rooms. And the king was sitting on his royal throne in the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. So can you just imagine what you would feel like standing there? But in verse 2, it says, it happened when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, she obtained favor in his sight. So there it is again. God granted her favor. And the king extended to Esther the golden scepter, which was in his hand. So Esther came near and touched the top of the scepter. Then the king said to her, "What is troubling you, Queen Esther, and what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it will be given to you." So, wow, she went in to speak, and he basically said, "I'll give you half the kingdom." And Esther said, "If it please the king, may the king and Haman come this day to the banquet that I've prepared for him." And the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, that we may do as Esther desires." So the king and Haman came to the banquet with which Esther had prepared. And as they drank their wine at the banquet, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition? For it shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to half the kingdom it shall be done." Now, I don't know about you guys, but when he said it the first time, I probably would have said, this is what's happening and we need you to help us. But definitely on the second request, I'm telling him everything that's happening. But she didn't. She waited to speak. She waited on God's timing. She had fasted and sought not only God's will, but God's timing. I would have asked right away when he said half the kingdom, but she waited on God's perfect timing. We had just finished recently the story of Abigail as one of David's wives. She also waited to tell her husband what had happened. So sometimes God just wants us to wait, and we have the hardest time with that because we're impatient and we want to do things in our timing, and we try to hurry up God's plan. So she waited, and she says, "My people, my petition and my request is," in verse 7, "if I've found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and do what I request, may the king and Haman come to the banquet, which I shall prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king asks or says." So in verse 9, Haman went out on that day glad and pleased of heart. But when he saw Mordecai in the king's gate and that he did not stand up or tremble before him, Haman was filled with anger against Mordecai. Haman controlled himself, however, went to his house and sent for his friends and his wife Jeresh. Then Haman recounted to them the glory of his riches, the number of his sons, every instance where the king had magnified him, and how he had been promoted above the princes and servants of the king. So he's very proud of those things. Haman also said, "Even Esther the queen let no one but me come with the king to the banquet which she had prepared, and tomorrow also I'm invited by her with the king. Yet all of this does not satisfy me every time I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." So Jeresh and his wife and all his friends said, "Have a gallows 50 cubits high made, and in the morning ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on it, and then go joyfully with the king to the banquet." And the advice pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made. Now watch the timing of God in chapter 6. During that night, the king could not sleep. So he gave an order to bring the book of records, the chronicles, and they were read before the king. So two things I love about this verse. Proverbs 21:1 says that the hearts of a king are channeled by the Lord. And I love that because even though he's the king, God is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And he can cause people to sleep, and he can take sleep from them. So the king could not sleep, and he decided to read. There's another place where this happens in the podcast I did about the widow in Elisha's time, where she also went before the king to request her land back. And the king had just been reading the accounts of what had happened to the prophet. And so in this case too, he's reading these chronicles. In verse 2 it says, It was found written what Mordecai had reported concerning Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who were doorkeepers, that they had sought to lay hands on the king. And the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing's ever been done for him." So the king said, "Who is in the court? Watch this timing." Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace in order to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows which he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said to him, "Behold, Haman is standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" And Haman said to himself, "Whom would the king desire to honor more than me?" So Haman said to the king, "For the man whom the king desires to honor, let him bring a royal robe which the king has worn, and the horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed. And let the robe and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble princes, and let them array the man whom the king desires to honor, lead them on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, 'Thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor.'" This is so funny, because that would not be what most people would say to honor someone. But Haman thinks it's for him, and he's so proud that this is the ridiculous thing that he comes up with. And God turns these tables, and he has to carry it out on Mordecai, whom he hates. So we think situations are just too hard for God, but even when we don't know the whole plot, he can completely turn it around. So Haman had to lead him. The king said, "Okay, take the robes and the horses and do everything that you've said." So in verse 12, Mordecai returned to the king's gate. Haman hurries home mourning with his head covered, and he recounts to Jeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that happened to him. And his wise men and Jeresh, his wife, said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him." And while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hastily brought Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. So now we're in chapter 7. Notice before we start this that if she had asked immediately, when I would have, that all of chapter 6 would not have happened. That the king wouldn't have read the story. I mean, he might have later, but it just fits neatly right before God answering the rest of her plan. So because she waited that extra day, all of chapter 6 happened. So in chapter 7, verse 1, it says, "Now the king and Haman came to drink wine with Esther the queen. And the king said to Esther on the second day, also as they drank their wine, 'What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be done.' And Queen Esther answered and said, 'If I found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me as my petition, and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, to be annihilated. Now if we had only been sold as slaves, men and women, I would have remained silent, for the trouble would not be commensurate with the annoyance to the king.' Then King Ahasuerus asked Queen Esther, 'Who is he, and where is he, who would presume to do this?' And Esther said, 'A foe and an enemy is this wicked Haman.' Then Haman became terrified before the king and queen. And the king arose in his anger from drinking wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm had been determined against him by the king. Now when the king returned from the palace garden into the place where they were drinking wine, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. The king said, 'Will he even assault the queen with me in the house?' And as the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbonah, one of the eunuchs who were before the king, said, 'Behold, indeed, the gallows standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king.' And the king said, 'Hang him on it.' So they hanged Haman on the gallows, which he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided." So in chapter 8, Verse 1, it says, on that day, King Ahasuerus gave the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, to Queen Esther. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had disclosed what he was to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken away from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king, fell at his feet, wept, and implored him to avert the evil scheme of Haman and his plot which he had devised against the Jews. And the king extended the golden scepter to Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king. So once again, she comes before him to petition him for, because even though he has taken action against Haman, the ruling still stood. So she again stood before him. This time it says that she fell at his feet, and he extended the scepter to again. And this time she says in verse 5, if it pleases the king, and if I found favor before him, and the matter seems proper to the king, and if I'm pleasing in his sight, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews who were in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the calamity which shall befall my people? And how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? So King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, behold, I've given the house of Haman to Esther, and him have they hanged on the gallows, because he stretched out his hands against the Jews. Now you write to the Jews as you see fit in the king's name, and seal it with the king's signet ring, for a decree which is written in the name of the king and sealed with the ring may not be revoked. So he's basically saying that first decree that got written can't be revoked. So you guys are going to have to write something, come up with something that you can write and seal it with my ring to the Jews. So in verse 9, the king's scribes were called in. And to write to the people according to their language and the Jews according to their language. And they wrote in the name Mordecai commanded and wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed it with the king's ring and sent letters by couriers on horses, riding on steeds, sired by the royal stud. In them the king granted the Jews who were in each and every city the right to assemble and to defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate the entire army of any people or province which might attack them, including children and women, and to plunder their spoil, on one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, the 13th day of the 12th month. So they issued that as law, and in verse 16 or 15 it says, Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, a large crown of gold, and a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. For the Jews there was light and gladness and joy and honor. So they're allowed to defend themselves. And in chapter 9, that day happens. The Jews fight. They are victorious over those that would try to kill them. The time, it says in verse 22 that it was a month which was turned for them from sorrow into gladness, from mourning into a holiday, that they should make them days of feasting and rejoicing and sending portions of food to one another and gifts to the poor. The Jews undertook what they'd started to do and what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, the adversary of all the Jews, had schemed against the Jews to destroy them and had cast Pur, that is the lot, to disturb them and destroy them. So therefore, in verse 26, they call these days Purim after the name of Pur. So it actually gets turned into a feast that's instituted forever. Let me see if I can find where they say that. Verse 28 says, these days were to be remembered and celebrated throughout every generation, every family, every province, every city. And these days of Purim were not to fail among the Jews, nor the memory fade from their descendants. And Queen Esther, the daughter of Abihail, with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm his second letter about Purim. He sent letters to all the Jews, to all 127 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus, namely words of peace and truth, to establish these days at their appointed times, just as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had established for them, and just as they established for themselves, for their descendants, with instructions for the times of fasting and lamentations. And the command of Esther established these customs, and it was written in the book. And then in chapter 10, Mordecai's greatness is written also in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings. For Mordecai the Jew was second only to the king and great among the Jews, and in favor with the multitude of his kinsmen, one who sought the good of his people and one who spoke for the welfare of his whole nation. So that is the story of Esther. The whole thing got turned around. And just a couple of things that I'd like to say about that. First, God doesn't move you into a position of prominence and power just for you. He moves you there to be a provision for others. The story of Esther, the story of Joseph, who got moved to second in command over Egypt in a time of famine to save people, to save his people. Moses, who was raised in Pharaoh's court and learned all of those ways and then went and stood before Pharaoh as the ruler, it was not for him. It was to move the entire tribe of Israel into the promised land. So here we have Esther, who's an orphan in a foreign land. She's literally the weakest of the weak. She's exiled. She's Jewish. She's a woman, and she's an orphan. God uses unlikely characters who start as a nobody to become a queen because God is looking for willing people. It was up to Esther to decide whether she would play the part God offered. Like Moses, she identified with God's people. Timing was so important, and she needed wisdom. And so I think one of the lessons we can learn from her when we're in a situation is to pray for God's wisdom, God's timing, and God's favor. He wants us to ask for his wisdom, his favor, and his purpose, and then not be afraid to step out. When I was studying for this, I kept thinking of like a Mission Impossible phrase. Do you understand the assignment, and do you choose to accept it? She didn't. She did not know the assignment, and she didn't know what the impossible mission was until chapter 4, 11 through 17, when Mordecai said to her, "Hey, you might be there for such a time as this." And you know what? Then she got it. It clicked. She didn't know she had an assignment before that. Before that, she just was like, okay, I found favor. This is great. Look where I am. Her situation before that can be viewed as bad because while she had initially been an orphan, she had found a home in her uncle's house. Now she was taken away from that and she had to go somewhere she didn't know with people she didn't know and a culture she didn't know and to be prepared to sleep with the king. So even though we've heard this as a beauty pageant, I don't know if you noticed some of the words used in the chapter where they were preparing her, but she was literally kept in a harem with a lot of other women who were going to sleep with the king also. It's sort of like The Bachelor, but with a scepter instead of a rose. So there was even a reference there that they were moved from one harem to the other after the night they spent with the king. So she would have been, the king would have been a lot older. He would have slept with all of these girls. You know, there was a whole year of preparation where she was separated from her home to fulfill the wishes of a king. And as I mentioned, after that night with the king, they lived in the palace forever as concubines. So even in this bad circumstance, God had a plan to use it because he works all things together for the good. And she found favor as Daniel and Nehemiah and Joseph did. But then she had to choose. She had to choose to accept the assignment and do the part, and she chose to seek God and to fast and to prepare for her part. Do you understand your assignment? I don't know where you are. I don't know your work or your relationships or your family situations, but God does, and he has an assignment for you. She went from fast to feast. One letter difference, just the E. God took the obedience to seek him in the fast in chapter 4, and by chapter 9, set aside historical days to celebrate that are still celebrated today. So he completely, the way God, only God can do, and the way he loves to do, completely turned the situation around. So at the end of these, I like to give something for us to praise God for. And in this story, we can praise him that he turns the wisdom and the power of the world, Haman was second in command and thought he had it all under control, on its head, after using the most surprising tactics to accomplish his plan. And then to be thankful that God has an important purpose for your life. It may not be to save a nation, but it may be. God's math is not our math. One person is just as important as a lot of people. There was a shoe salesman who witnessed to Billy Graham. You never know. Your one person could change the world. So you have to do your assignment. Then something to confess. And I think the confession here would be the tendency to isolate ourselves from God's people. She did keep her background, her heritage, a secret at first, and it was important to do that. But she then stepped out for her people. And twice she went to the king the first time, and then she went before him again to plea for the lives of her people. And then lastly, something to ask God for. And I think just ask him for the grace to act courageously and wisely and to be obedient to fill your assignment. So that is the story of Esther. Thank you for joining. And come back and look for the next one. We're almost done with the Old Testament, and then we'll be starting the New Testament. Thank you for listening.